Silly Conversations, the podcast. Your host, Denzel Mills.
Hi, Denzel.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Denzel. It's been so long.
It has been such a long time, but you're always looking good. Always looking good.
Well, you know? Well, like you too.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
No, thank you. But anyway, so how's life generally before we start?
God, jeez. Life's been busy.
Yeah.
As you probably saw on Instagram. So we met like 13 years ago now. Denzel.
Yeah.
12.
Yeah, I think it's, I have no idea.
Yeah, well, it was 12 years ago that we met.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do the introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting people. Again, another silly conversation. How silly? I don't know, because here we have a gentleman who's been working and living in London and doing fantastic things. I'm going to let him introduce himself. He's called Gomer. He's originally from Valencia, and he's going to introduce himself, and then we'll just take it from there. So, like I said to you before, Gomer, thank you very, very much for your time. Looking fantastic as always. Introduce yourself to the podcasting world.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Denzel. Thank you so much for the invite. It's a pleasure to do anything with you because thanks to you and 12 years ago,
well, come on, not thanks to me. Not thanks to me. Listen, when I met you...
Don't be humble.
No. When I met you, you had this talent and you had the skill and the initiative.
Thank you so much for what you're saying. It's reciprocated. I have the same opinion about you. Yeah, it's been a long journey, to be honest. So one of my hesitations when I moved to London was the language.
Yeah.
Because in Spain, we learn the language. We all go to school. We have extra activities with the language, with English. I'm going to activities outside the uni or whatever it is because we really want to improve the language. But the reality is when I moved to London, I found out that my level wasn't that good.
But remember, it's also London as well. There's such a mix and the accent from the different areas of London as well, yeah?
You know, you're very funny because, and I never told you this, but on the first couple of years, I would say, and I used to live in the Scotland South.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to work on the Northern Line and I used to spend that time on the train praying because I was so afraid. And I'm not religious, but I was so afraid.
Yeah.
Going to work, I feel embarrassed.
But you were working, because I remember when you, I think, I don't know where it was, but I remember you got a job in Liberty's.
Yeah, so when I moved to London, the first thing I did, it was to subscribe to St. Martin.
Yep.
Because I was doing something related to fashion in Spain.
So St. Martin's, for those of people who don't know, is a very well-known and very famous arts school. Related to fashion, people like Stella McCartney's been there, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just a normal college or university now, but a lot of people have come out of that who are in the fashion world and arts world, et cetera.
Yeah, I wanted to find it like a motivation when I moved here. So I registered myself for a short course for creative reactive fashion, which is what I was doing unofficially in Spain. And that was the beginning. And I remember doing presentations in front of 20 people to discuss my projects. And I really was struggling with the language. But I think when you come to this point, you just need to be brave,
yep.
Face it, and find the right words and express yourself. Because honestly, people understand you.
Yeah.
And people get the idea, people get their point. And it's the whole composition. It's you, the way you speak.
Yeah, and I suppose really, like you said, people were not judging or were not looking at you in terms of how you were present, how you were speaking. They were looking at the quality of your ideas and the concepts you were talking about when you were presenting, basically in on the course.
Yeah, that was the case. So I think in general we get obsessed with like small details, but at the end of the day, it's just communication.
Yeah.
So I went through that and I found that job in Liberty's. I really enjoyed it, and I've been there for 2 years and a half, and it was such a good experience surrounded with people who are very into art and fashion and models. And it was great. It was great.
But then that first period, because adapting, and Valencia is a very comfortable place to live. But then you go to a place where it's just enormous. It's always difficult to go to a new place. Doesn't matter if it's a new country, but go to a new place and then you have to adapt. You have to find somewhere to live. You have to get to know the neighborhood. You have to start finding your feet and then finding the people and the things around you that kind of connect. So thinking back to that, how long do you think it took you to kind of find that little niche, or are you still finding it?
I said this many times to people. It took me a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a couple of years to become comfortable with the language and with the place. Then you get used to the distances, you get used to the weather, and you get people's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was the thing? What was the one thing that you think really stood out for you in that first period? Because you thought, okay, this is the cultural norm. I'll just copy. I don't know if there was anything that you picked up, you noticed in those first couple years that you started to do, which you wouldn't have done normally.
It is human behavior to survive. Mm. So when I came here, it was something that I actually appreciated along the years, which is silence.
but silence in London sounds a little bit strange, yeah?
Right, that when you go on the tube, nobody talk to you, and you feel completely anonymous.
Yeah.
And I kind of like appreciate that. And you go to the gym, nobody look at you. You don't interact on the places that are no time for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so even at work, that was something that very strange at work. So you chit chat with someone at work, like if it's related to any business or any conversation related to anything that. It might just be related to work. But when you go for a coffee on the corridor, which is like outside work, they don't talk to you.
Yeah. Yes.
Or you go to the street, you go to the same restaurant, or you go to the same cafe, they just don't talk to you. And at the beginning, it was very shocking. Like, did I do something to him or to her?
Yeah.
Was there something wrong with me? And then you understand people is very focused on their own thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think... And this is one of the things I think sometimes people, and some people find it very, very difficult to manage because they kind of feel they're used to having those or setting up those conversations and starting those random conversations at the bus stop and things like that, etc. And I think it's also something with the South, because when I was in Manchester and Lancaster, when I used to live in those areas, people would start up these conversations and go on forever and ever. So I think it's very much a South thing.
I have a feeling this is the case because... Every time I've been traveling in the UK, I have the same sort of feeling.
Yeah.
And but it's also because it's London. Just everyone is so busy,
yeah.
Like mentally busy.
Yeah. So then you worked in Liberty's, you said, for a couple of years. And then What was your next step?
So then it's very funny because sometimes we underestimated our own skills, I have to say. So when I start talking in English a little bit better, I start getting kind of like the comments like, "Guma, you're good at this. You have the taste, you have the eyes for it, you have the talent to deal with people and this and that." So I start thinking like maybe I have to step out, go somewhere else a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
And so I just been doing like my own research and I found this job in Dior, in Christian Dior. And since then, So it's now about 9 years. In the company.
And the reason why I didn't want to say anything at the beginning, because, you know, I wanted you to actually say, because I've seen on his Instagram and some of the events you are involved in, and I've always wanted to ask you, so this is the perfect opportunity. So what is it you actually do for Christian Dior, apart from travel?
So
and travel, yeah. and look good. Believe me, I'm telling you. I've seen some of it and I thought, this guy, could I ever get to that level of fashion, or is it has to be injected in the blood? Well, it looks good. So what do you do for Dior?
So I'm the VIP manager in New Bond Street boutique at the moment and assistant manager for the lead community in Europe and Middle East.
Right.
So these two positions are actually related to managing clients at a certain level.
Because you said you were a VIP...
manager.
So you're VIP manager. So basically, you kind of have a selective group of people who you would advise and shop for and guide. Is that the role of a VIP manager?
If the VIP manager role is actually focused on top clients,
mm-hmm.
they are internationally well-known. And when they do shopping in London, we are a team of 4 people.
Right.
That we manage this appointment.
Right. So the team now, was it a team that you built or a team you inherited? Or did you start in the team and then become the manager? How did your team develop?
So it's been a process actually, and it's been a lot of changes because we're trying to be adapting to what will be better for the business. So the current structure is like we have 4 VIP managers,
right,
dealing with like a very substantial clientele, and which is normally a client which is, as you probably can imagine, very demanding and very high profiles.
Yeah,
and that's the reason why I'm normally traveling. So I'm normally going with them, like whatever they want me to go to do a styling, to do sales, to do events.
This is one of the questions I had in my mind. When we, or even before we met, you were here doing your own thing. Now, if you think back retrospectively at that time, did you ever imagine you would be where you are today, doing the thing that you're doing today? Was it ever something that ever came across your mind, thinking retrospectively?
It's very interesting, and it's happened to any aspect in about life. Like whatever you manifest, whatever you see yourself doing, it's gonna happen.
I kind of agree with that. Yes.
And the reality is, my father was a businessman. My mom, she was a seamstress, and I'm always been related to fashion in a way. And I have this double face situation because my dad wanted to go to the office, bring his things, and my mom, she wanted to help her in the workshop, in the atelier. And for me, it's nothing strange because I've always been kind of like familiar with fabrics, shapes, and this and that. And I just find my own niche. But it's true. I've never been thinking like or dreaming to belong to one of his houses because the brand that I work for is one of the tops along a couple of others. But it's only 2 of the brands in the world that we do couture. So I thought it would be a thing for me because I was feeling kind of like connected to that delicate part.
Yeah.
But I never thought it would be growing like this. So I never thought that would be like VIP manager or anything, to be honest.
So what was your sensation when you got that job with Dior? Was it the kind of thing that you kind of was traveling back home on the tube and you were thinking, can't believe it? Were you, I don't know, texting the world or were you just kind of shocked? Or how did you react when you think, okay, I'm going to be working for Dior?
You know, that's how challenging is London and how competitive it is. So it wasn't like an offer like from one day to the other. It's been a process that I've been actually acting as a VIP manager before getting the position.
Right.
So sometimes in certain businesses, you just get the position because you're just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get involved, you just get passionate, get understanding the business, and then at some point, for 2 people, you just deserve.
Yeah, but like you said, though, you're talking about a place where people would eat you alive to be in your position. It's not 20 people or a city of a smaller number where there's 20 people trying to do the same thing. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
I don't think
probably each month trying to do whatever they can do to get into or start on and improve themselves. Because that's the other thing. Once you get in, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of people who maybe do some work for you, whether they're makeup artists or makeup or stylists or whatever. And they're trying to also impress you so that you work with them more so that they can get into that niche group in a sense, because it is a very, mm-hmm. very, very niche group. So how do you manage that? Yeah, well, how do you manage that? That's the question. How do you manage that?
That's the question. So it's a very big question. There is a lot of elements involved in my job. One of them is the psychology. So there is a lot of like in regards of team and in regards of the client. You need to be quite smart to be with everything, because this is like an orchestra. You just need to make everything happen and to work and everyone to be happy. Otherwise, you can face situations that are quite uncomfortable. Because it's a very demanding business. It's a lot of negotiation. There's a lot of strategy behind. There's a lot of things going on how to cover expectations for everyone.
And so you said there's a lot of negotiation going on. So is it something that maybe it's part of your, or it has been part of your personality previously? But when we talk about, you said there's a lot of negotiation. Have you noticed that your style of communication has modified over the years? Or is it, like you said, you had these abilities where people noticed in you previously, and all you're doing is amplifying them just a little bit? Or is it something that you've really had to work on learning?
I'm laughing because it's been such a huge effort for me to adapt working for a French company in England. So
if I remember, you speak French as well, yes, and Italian.
Just a little bit. Yeah, a little bit of French. It's been very, very challenging adapting to the French culture and the French way they do their things in England.
That must be strange, isn't it? Yes.
It's a big thing. It's a big thing. Being Spanish is a big thing. And I definitely changed my personality. Yeah. So you kind of adapt. I mean, you just need to be very flexible. And I'm always saying this to the team. You have 2 ears, 1 mouth. You listen double that you speak.
Yeah.
Especially in this environment.
But I think this is one of the things in business to do is listen. Don't go and tell. I think this is with negotiation as well. You need to kind of listen more to find out the nuances of what your client is talking about, etc., and then start to work around that. If you go telling, you may be missing opportunities, but also depending on the cultural things, because you're saying French company, working in Europe, Spanish person. I don't know if you have other nationalities in your team as well.
Oh, we have every DM which cover.
So you've got these different nationalities in your team. So there's this mix there where, okay, there's going to be a universal form of how people work because that's how they've developed. And then people sometimes, I suppose, are suppressing a little bit of their cultural style to meet the needs of a individual client at that particular time and the structure or the needs of the company and the environment they work in. So there's three
things. It's a lot. It's a lot going on. But the major thing here is that we are Spanish. We're very talkative. We're very direct. We're very touchy. We're very tactile.
Yeah.
And that is not appreciated. So that was the first adjustment. That was the very first adjustment at work. If you want a kind of success, because, I mean, it depends on the business or what you're going to do for work. But when you come to the UK, you really need to readjust. And also, there's something that Spanish people, we complain a lot.
Yes.
We complain all the time. When in here, we can have this note, this level, no one is going to say anything.
Yeah. But this is the British thing, which is you never want to make a fuss. This is the word. You never want to make a fuss. You never want to make a complaint. You know, you've probably experienced a lot of times being waiting in the metro or taxis or things in the airport, and then somebody jumps the queue, jumps the line. And people just, okay, we'll accept it. We don't want to make a fuss. You know, there's comments, little comments between people, but never this outright. Whereas in Spain, you notice that people would then, you know, automatically, oh yeah, mira que esta pasando.
It's very strange that people in England is going to confront.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to work, on the work environment, it's all about negotiations. And it's all about being constructive and to look for the better, for the best of the business. So it's not for your own benefit, which actually you need to find your own benefit, but you need to make it look it's for the benefit of the business in a way. So, and with clients, it's the same. With the clients, it's the same. So at the end of the day, we're selling things that are desirable, but nobody needs them.
Yeah.
So it's all about creating emotions, creating, you know, a good relationship and good communication, now being pushy is what you said.
And again, because of your interest, and also now you've been the last 9 years within this environment, there are certain things which I suppose are seen as normal to you. But the luxury side of things is a completely different world, I think.
It is a completely different world. I don't know. I probably have a different previous life in a palace because I'm very used to it.
Yeah.
And but it's a bit shocking when you talk about very high figures.
Yeah.
Then you get used to it. You get used to it. It's a business. But also because you're just trying to make feel people comfortable when they purchase in these things rather than feel them and make them feel guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of a game.
So then in terms of, like you said, you do a lot of traveling or preparation. So what would be a typical event for a client? So for example, it was something like a fashion show in Paris. How advanced or how many days in advance do you go out? Or what kind of preparation do you need to do? Paris fashion show, as a particular person, model, etc. What kind of preparations do you need to kind of put in place for when that client arrives, they're ready to go?
So actually, I'm currently working in the next fashion show, which is the 27th of January in Paris. It's a haute couture, spring summer 2025.
All right.
And I'm traveling with a couple. They're from London. So we're normally traveling in the private jet. So we're landing together in Paris. But we already been preparing the whole itinerary. So the itinerary is ready and it's a 3-night hotel. And with all the lunches and dinners and experiences.
Right.
And attending the fashion show, gala dinner, and etc. For the fashion show, we normally start, it depends on the show, but we normally start working on the selection of the clients 3 months ahead.
Mm-hmm. So the selection here is for the clients who are attending the show, their outfits for that those events, yes?
Imagine we have like 1,000 of clients on the data.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go to the highest track, either the honestly that they spend the most, and that's the part of the strategy because you can secure it's going to be a return on investment,
right?
And because it's a treatment.
Yeah,
go to Paris, you get the hotel, you book the flights or the train, and where they're coming from, but there is an expectation, obviously,
right?
So,
right.
And everything has to be organized according to that. And there's thousands of clients, so we can only select probably from London, imagine, maximum 5.
Right.
From London, yeah. So it has to be the perfect profile.
But then in a situation like that, what time does your day start? Imagine now you're actually in Paris and it's the day before the show, etc. What does your day start like when you're actually working and what time do you finish?
So when I'm in Paris, I normally sleep with my 2 phones because anything can happen. And I normally wake up at 6:30.
Oh, this is a normal time. I do 6:30. 6:30 is a normal time, man.
What are you expecting?
This is normal, you know?
So normally like 6:30 or 7, I have a quick breakfast just in case someone calls me. And then normally I stay nearby the hotel or the clients. Before they come to the hotel, I normally go check myself, everything's ready, like rooms, favorite drinks, bright flowers and everything. And I need to check the cars are ready and to see who are the drivers to make sure someone else is going to be, you know, trustful and
sensible. So obviously now all this you're doing, what, in French or a combination of French and English or depend?
And it's actually a struggle in Paris. You don't speak French. No, everyone speaks English. So every time I go to Paris, it's a bit complex.
But the thing is, people always say the Parisians are very snobbish. Very, very snobbish. This is what people say. And I don't speak French. I remember once I was trying to learn the language and I was in Montpellier and then I would try to present or buy something in French. And I found out that if you ask, do you speak English? The answer is always no. If you start in French, the French realize that you're destroying their language and they actually say to you, do you speak English? And they change over. And I thought, let me just try this again. And I literally was trying it and I'd go in and je voudrais une croissant. And they say, anglaise? Yes. Okay, I know speaking English. So that was a trick. That was a trick.
That was a strategy, actually. I'm going to try that one.
It was a strategy. Yeah. So then a finish time. So you start around 6:30, and then finishing.
I never know because there is so many things involved. So it depends. I can go to sleep with the clients.
Right. Yeah. And then, so when you're with a client, is there another person which forms part of your team, or are you kind of, do you like have an assistant, or you're just by yourself?
It depends on the case and it depends on the destination. I can be by myself,
mm-hmm.
but I'm always have my team on the phone.
Right.
When it comes to Paris, there is a bigger part of the team. So it's the marketing director, general manager. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so cool because, like I said, I saw the things. I could understand in my head where you are and why you're there, you know, from many years ago, first met you and I thought, I could see that, yes, you're in the right place. You know, I don't know why, or I don't know how to maybe describe it or explain it, but, you know, sometimes you see some people and you think, yeah, I had this sensation that they could get to this place, or they could be doing this, or they have this ability. There's a couple of people I have now that they have potential to go forward.
I mean, when the company has the trust, you absorb everything which is offered to you, and you just learn, and you're capable, and you show you're capable to do it, and nothing is going to stop you to learn.
So, yeah.
But there is a lot of preparation on that. And you know what? And I mean, I'm always cool, but I remember in Spain, there is no such a thing. There is no like a skills preparation. Like, we don't know how to sell ourselves, you know? And when you come to London, people is competitive because they know how to do it. So they know how to.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, I mean, is selling yourself in terms of your technical abilities and backing it up with actually demonstrating it. And there's a lot of people who talk about, oh, I can do this, or I've worked there and I've worked this, but they can't really, how can I say, justify it or back it up, you know? You need that kind of that ability to actually put your, what's the expression now? Is it put your word where your mouth is? I'm forgetting many expressions. Is it?
I can't believe that it happens to me too. Yeah, yeah.
I'm forgetting many expressions in English now, you know. Anyway, basically, show people what you say you can do and demonstrate it, and demonstrate it well. You know, there's always a thing like sometimes you have to kind of under-promise and over-deliver.
Exactly. That's a good point.
So then in the free time, when you get some free time, what's life like?
Traveling. Because I never had enough.
Yeah? See, just always traveling, yeah? But for
always traveling, but I had to take a break. You know, I promised myself to have a break. So January, I only have this trip to Paris for 4 days. I'm a very social. That's the thing. On my free time, I'm always going to see friends. So I either plan my things with my partner or I just go by myself. But I'm always involved on any kind of like event, parties. I mean, and that's the thing as well. When you become very involved in this in this land,
mm-hmm.
everyone is starting inviting you.
Yeah.
And you cannot say no.
Well, you could try. It depends. Well, it depends because obviously when it's people you like, obviously you're going to make the effort to go and you want to go because you enjoy that
yes.
moment sitting down, chatting or just having a coffee with people you like. Then there's the kind of next level of the circle where it could be you're invited because of a work type of relationship or a kind of connection type of relationship. And maybe that's a compromise or that maybe you're not that interested in doing, but you weigh up the pluses and minuses, pluses and pros and cons. That's it. You weigh up the pros and cons.
You know, but there is a point like your lifestyle is very related to your job.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't consider myself at the level of the clients I have, obviously, but I'm part of that circle and this sort of a scene, which is going to the private class. Then people that want to introduce people, and then you get like actively involved on the social life. And it's been quite stressful last year. That's why I had to stop.
Yeah. If you then thought, what would be the next level? If you said, okay, I'm going to do X amount of years with Dior, What would be the next level that you think, oh, I'd like to try to do in terms of professional career? Would it be, like you said, continuing in the sense of setting up and helping other people develop in the industry? Would it be sort of like sitting back? Would it be, I don't know, starting your own company in something? What would you, what is the future hold for you, my friend?
You said all the options. So,
because I'm a mind reader. I'm a mind reader.
You say all the options. I'm contemplating.
Yeah.
For the moment, I think I'm still have things to do in VR. And I will never probably move to a different house. I've been offered like a few times to move to different houses. But honestly, it doesn't adjust to what I do at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's quite complete.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point to move to another house. That's for the fact, not even for the offer, for the conditions. So I'm going to stay a few more years here until I really find out what I want to do.
But would there be a change of country? Possibly.
Yes.
Yeah. But then...
But
look at the extreme. Would you consider going to the States and working? Like in obviously this area, like I don't know, maybe Hollywood's the easier definition for me as a and maybe for people who are listening. But would you consider moving to the States and maybe trying to work in that kind of Hollywood world as well in terms of assistance to people, or that doesn't appeal to you in that sense?
And it is very funny that you're mentioning this because I met recently someone that offered that in the long term.
Okay, we can cut this out in the podcast just in case.
We can edit
it out in the podcast if it's necessary.
You like Tyler River, that's enough. So, there's a few options internationally. I'm still discussing with myself what would be the best. But it's nothing like clear because I think I'm still have things to do. I have so much going on at the moment, to be honest. But in the future, I really would like to do something on my own related to coaching.
Right.
But then, we probably coaching related to luxury.
Yeah. But then would that be, well, first of all, another question, would you be coming back to Spain at any point to live? Do you think life will end in the UK? That sounds a bit daunting. Life will end in the UK. Yeah, I'll say it first. For here, for me, Valencia's home, and this is where it's going to be. So there's no moving and things like that. So home is here, and it always has been here. So I will be staying here. But I have a tendency that my objective is to stay to at least 175 years old. Still looking good, still being healthy and looking good, though.
Exactly. Otherwise, not
what's
worth
the point?
It.
Exactly. What's the point?
Not worth it.
So, would you be coming back to Spain? Do you think, or you don't see it at the moment?
I kind of like lost the connection with the country, to be honest. It's a very personal decision, but I love going to Spain, and I love Spain, and I think we're a very special country. I just enjoy when I go on holidays, to be honest. And in my path, it's a bit complicated. I know how it is. I know how's the market and I know what they're doing in there. And so it will be quite like restricting myself and on what I'm doing.
One of the key things you actually said, and I think I spoke to a couple other people who are French, etc., from Brazil as well. And the thing you said where you lose that connection, even if you've got like brothers or sisters or family, I don't feel Britain or England or Britain rather than England is home. You know, for me, I've lost that connection and I've never felt it now as if it's home or a place that I would like to go back to if the worst came to the worst. But for me, you've kind of lost that connection, even if you've got people. And it's interesting you said that as well, that kind of losing that connection. And I think, but after a while, you do lose that kind of sensation of belonging to a place and where you are, and that's where your home is.
It sounds a bit weird, and it sounds very weird when it comes to Latin, because Latin we kind of like very attached to our regions. Along the years, but it's just my personality. I just feel comfortable wherever I am, wherever I decide to be. And it's true what you say. I mean, it's going to become an end. I will probably move out of the UK, like career-wise, and also because I wanted to be experienced in probably like a different country. And I have a few in mind, but I haven't decided anything because it will depend on many, many elements.
Yeah.
But going back to Spain, definitely for holidays, you mean to have a house by the sea, hopefully Valencia, why not? I've been living in Valencia for 11 years, so we are kind of attached to Valencia because we have very good friends in Valencia. But coming back will be like definitely when retired.
No, I mean, I understand. I mean, what you're saying, I understand. And like I said, I think sometimes the only way you can actually, I think, connect to where you are living and be successful. And successful depends on what people want to be. But to integrate, to kind of find your space, find your people and find something that you need to do, you need to kind of disconnect from somewhere. You know, I've got students or I've known people and they've got a job in Madrid. Every weekend they come back to Valencia. There's no way you're going to get to know Madrid as a place. You know, you're every weekend taking the metro, AVE, coming back on a Friday and then going back first thing Monday morning or Sunday. And then you say, I don't really know anybody in Madrid. Why? Because you haven't made the effort to get to know the place. And
I know it's always challenging and uncomfortable. I mean, it's out of our comfort zone. You know, you have to move somewhere because of work or because of relationship or whatever it is. And you really need to challenge yourself and be part of it. Otherwise, you're really going to struggle, like emotionally. And
I think, you know, everything has a 3-year period or 1.5-year period. And I think after you kind of have that turbulent period, and I think once you've passed that, if you haven't made that decision that this is where I am and this is what I need to understand, whether it's a language, but then you decide, well, this is home and I want to be more independent. I want to be able to buy a mobile phone without having problems, or I want to be able to organize this contract and, you know, these kind of things. And then you make that decision to say, okay, I need to learn and I need to understand where I'm living to feel comfortable in the place and start to understand the people around me, the culture around me, etc. You may never ever be seen as a Londoner, or I may never be seen as a Valenciano, you know, but it's the place where you're living. It's your home and you need to make that effort. And that's what I think where people sometimes, I'm being very polite, a lot of people don't do that.
No, because there is a lot of fears. There is a lot of fears I mean, there is a lot of psychological things on it. Like, you don't want to cut your religion to be able to understand what you're saying. Like, you are here physically. You need to start understanding what you're doing and what you belong to. It's an exercise, but it gives you happiness because the more you learn and the more you integrate yourself, you want to enjoy it more.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the key thing.
That's the equation.
You know, trying to be happy. Learning to be happy. There's a lot of people who are, I have to say, unhappy. They fake being happy, smile and this and I was going to say compañeros, the people at work, et cetera, but they fake being happy. But I think we have levels of happiness, you know, what we need to display. And I'm sure with your work, every time you're with a client, regardless, cold, tired, et cetera, arguments previously, things going wrong, et cetera, you have to present a face which is always going to be connected to what they want, whether it's the person you like or not, whether they're fun-loving or not, whether they're a pain in the ass. You need to kind of give them the face that they need to see for those 2 or 3 days. Then you've got the staff, the team, and we all have our ups and downs, but if you ask somebody, are you really happy? Are you really happy? Can you actually say you're really happy? And I think speaking for me, most of the time I can say yes. COVID was a bit of a shit. Okay. COVID time. You know, that was a bit of, and the, and the first economic financial crisis, etc. But even between all of that, you know, I don't think there was, I don't think I could say there was a whole period like 6 months or a year when I wasn't happy. Months, periods. But if you talk about the whole generic view of things, are you happy within yourself? And I have to say, yes. Things could be better. Things could improve. But are you happy within yourself? And I have to say, yes. And this is without any drugs whatsoever. Just chocolate and wine.
It depends on the age as well then. So, I mean, when you got to a certain age, life can be quite tough. Even on the worst periods or the negative periods, I'm always taking like a lesson. Like, okay, this happened. This shit happened. What am I learning from this? I mean, and it can be related to work. I've been struggling like recently for specific aspect on work related. And it's been a process. And I learned so much from myself. Like, what are my limits? What is my behavior facing those situations? This and that. Happiness, like the word, probably doesn't exist for anyone.
Mm.
But we have this.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That statement. But that statement, happiness maybe doesn't exist for anyone. That's a serious statement. Oh, that's a very serious statement.
I'm convinced. But it depends how you face it.
Mm.
In my case, personally, I'm the most optimistic in the world. I'm so optimistic. I'm always carry on. Yeah, I have my moments. But I'm always like, you know, stand up again and try to improve, and that's it.
That's the most important thing. I think you've got to kind of have your moments of reflection, but then you kind of think, okay, what's it going to be like tomorrow? Or what's it going to be like at the end of this week? Or what's it going to be like next month? And maybe it's that idea what you said at the very beginning, this idea of willing things to happen, you know, looking at things forward and actually projecting it. And actually, as you're projecting, you will somewhere along the line, whether it's people, whether it's by accident, whether there's a force, it kind of pushes you in that direction. And what you actually say and think, you make those steps and you try and find yourself in the right places to actually achieve them. And then when you're there, make it work for you.
I would like to recommend a book if I can. There is this book from Lucy Maflossi, which is a British girl. She got this, I think she's going now for the third book. And the first one was called Manifesting.
Mm-hmm, Manifesting.
And it's one of those internal therapies for yourself. And it's quite constructive. But she became someone quite famous in the UK related to that.
What's the name of the artist? Sorry.
Roxy Nafosi. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Roxy Nafosi.
Okay.
That's the key thing in life, you know? Like, the thing is that we need to be conscious about we emotionally not going to be always like this. So to recognize we are happy, we need to be sad first. To recognize we are not suffering stress, we might have to suffer stress to see the difference. So,
But do you find that people feel uncomfortable questioning themselves? Because I think people feel a little bit uncomfortable asking themselves the question. Because it's very uncomfortable to say, am I good at what I'm doing? Or am I happy? Or am I happy in this relationship? Am I happy with this person? Do I like who I am? Whatever. These are strong questions to ask yourself. Because it's easy when somebody else tells you, you can say, es un idiota. Exactly. But when you actually recognize yourself that I'm making my own difficulties and problems, that's very hard.
I mean, you can criticize yourself, but it would always depend on your ego and your level of narcissism.
Mm.
But it's good to reflect and to see what you're good at and do it.
Yeah.
In all aspects of life.
Yeah. But I think people find it very difficult to do that self-questioning.
It depends on the personality. Have you heard about the four colors personalities as well?
No.
And you have the red personality, blue personality, green and yellow.
Right.
Which I apply on the daily basis of my client's personality because it depends on the... And you can detect the color personalities straight away. And according to that, you behave in a different way. and it will affect to sales or the way you behave in front of that person. I highly recommend it. Very good technique.
So, internet people, whoever's listening to this at some time in the future, check it out. You're going to have some homework. I don't talk grammar on this podcast, but I'm going to give you some homework. Check out this whole thing about the, was it color personalities you said? Check out this whole thing about color personalities. That's going to be your homework. And then whatever you learn from it, try to apply it. In 50 years' time, when you are wherever you are, send me an email and say thanks. There you go. Silly conversations.
I actually apply on my daily basis because it really helps to know who you're facing, that you have to behave. Because, I mean, but that's the reason why with some people you're more reserved. With some people you feel more relaxed, like the both of us.
I like to keep to my times that I've said to people. But there's still more to do. There's still more to talk about. Maybe in about 6 months or a year's time, I need to get in touch with you again to see where you are.
Anytime.
You know?
Anytime.
And then this is an objective for me to keep the podcast going for another year, just to see where you are.
Exactly. So
that's the idea. But it has been so, so cool. It has been so interesting. I'm just very happy for you, to be quite honest.
Oh, thank you, Denzel. But I'm very happy for you. You look amazing.
Well, I'm telling you, just use the right kind of face creams, you know, is the right kind of, no Botox, just the right kind of face creams, you know, and in my case, eat chocolate. I love chocolate, you know.
You look amazing. You look happy. And you look like you're enjoying what you do, which is the most important thing. That's it.
So, my friend, it was very, very nice having a chat with
very
you.
Very nice talking to you. Congratulations for the project.
It was very interesting, the information you're giving me, you know. I mean, like I said, I'll edit it down now. But the information you're giving me, and I really do think that there's a couple people when I kind of look back over the years that give me a lot of inspiration to say, look where these people are. It's because they had an idea that they wanted to do it, you know, and it doesn't necessarily mean you have to leave the country. You know, it's the commitment and the effort and the sacrifice sometimes. And sometimes losing that connection, but it's very, very nice to see where you are and see the things that you're involved with. And now I have a better understanding of what your job is. And at some stage, when this podcast becomes 10 billion listeners, I may need to contract your services, sir. I may need to contract your services, sir, in about 50 years' time. So keep going.
No, but then, so if you're gonna do any other activity, I'm happy to collaborate. Handy.
Yes, it's very cool. Very cool, you know, talking to you. Haven't changed. You haven't changed at all. So, but thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
It's been a serious pleasure talking to you. And I still have many more questions about the whole world you're involved in, but this could be for another time.
We can do that. Denzel, and good luck with everything, okay?
The voices and the names have been changed in this podcast to protect the wicked. For any grammar, information, or correction, please ask someone else, not me.